Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we get to talk baseball, but with a different angle on baseball. I'm sitting in the studio with the current issue of Sports Illustrated. How about that? And it has a picture. It's a terrific picture of Monet Davis with the headline, "Monet, Remember Her Name." As if we could ever forget. Monet was in the Little League World Series, and she just captivated so many people. She's been asked to be on talk shows, and she pitches at 70 miles an hour at the age of 13. And she was just the 11th girl to play in the Little League World Series and the only one to win a game on the mound. She has now been experiencing the glare of the spotlight. And when we started thinking about her, we thought about a couple things. Number one, women in baseball. And what about women breaking through and being in the major leagues? Our guest this hour has written about baseball's female Jackie Robinson, an incredible story. She played for the Negro Leagues. And we also wanted to look at this whole issue of African Americans in Major League Baseball. The Jackie Robinson West of Chicago was in the finals with South Korea. South Korea won yesterday, but oh my gosh, everybody in Chicago was so excited about this team. Why have the numbers of African Americans in Major League Baseball declined? And what about women in baseball? Well, this hour we'll be speaking with Martha Ackman. She's an author, a journalist, and a speaker, and she wrote a book on women in baseball. She was interested in the three women who played ball in the Negro Leagues. The book is Curveball, the remarkable story of Toni Stone, the first woman to play professional baseball in the Negro League. She's also, Martha that is, author of The Mercury 13, the true story of 13 women and the dream of spaceflight. She writes about women who have changed America. Her works have appeared in the New York Times, Boston Globe, LA Times, and many other publications. And so some of you maybe played baseball when you were young. Do you think that we've reached a time when you look at someone like Monet when women may break through to the majors? And they've already done so in the Negro League. So what about that? And why are there declining numbers of African Americans in Major League Baseball? What do you make of these really inner city teams that just broke through and received so much attention and played so well in the Little League champions? So here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also find us on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Martha, hello.
Hi, Kathleen.
Thank you very much for being with us. I'm looking at Sports Illustrated, so let's start with this story of Monet Davis. 70 miles an hour, and she's only 13 years old. It's no wonder we're captivated by this young woman.
Oh, she really did capture the nation's attention, I think. And, you know, from I heard that the Monet jerseys were sold out. They couldn't keep them in stock. The Twitter is ablaze with all sorts of people, from Brittany Griner to NBA stars cheering her on. You know, when I think about Toni Stone, who you mentioned in your intro there, who played in 1953, the difference in public reception between those who watched Toni play, and there were some supporters, but more not, and those who watch Monet play is really staggering.
So you are thinking then that maybe we're not looking at too long a time before we will see a woman in the major leagues, do you think?
Well, I hope so. I'm often asked the question, will we see women in the major leagues? And I always answer the way I just did by saying I hope so. But I think there's another question there that we need to examine, and that is, why aren't we providing elite athletic opportunities for girls who excel in the way that Monet does? You know, I don't know if it needs to be a woman in the major leagues, but we certainly need to provide more opportunities for girls who are good at baseball. You know, maybe a women's league, something on the line of the WNBA. But we have a long way to go in giving professional opportunities to women in sport.
Mm-hmm. The other part of the story certainly is African-American young people in the sport of baseball, that it's dropped off in the major leagues, and that we were looking at too, even the soon-to-be commissioner of baseball was rooting for a Philadelphia-Chicago pairing in the World Series because it would have been two Central City teams, and you don't see very many of them. So why is that?
Well, I think there are a lot of reasons. You know, I think the stats are that they're around 8% of the current Major League Baseball players are African Americans. That's a huge drop, almost 20% from what it was in 1986. The smallest share of black players in Major League Baseball in over 50 years. And you know, I think we can look at a lot of things. One is the scarcity of organized urban programs for youngsters, the small number of college scholarships for baseball players, and the expense. That Las Vegas team that many people were watching, that's almost a group of professional 13-year-old baseball players. I mean, right. With the travel expenses, often paid coaches, year-round play. Teams like Philadelphia and the Chicago teams, many urban teams, can't afford that kind of support.
Mm-hmm. So we need to do some kind of special program. Major League Baseball needs to concentrate on setting up programs to reach people of color, particularly in this country. Heavens knows they are doing this in the Dominican Republic.
That's a good example, and I think you're quite right. Bud Selig, the current commissioner of baseball, has formed a committee to look into the issue of why there are so few, relatively few, African-American players in the majors. And there have been some criticisms of that committee. One critique is that there aren't members who have connections to urban youth baseball, who really have a kind of on-the-ground feel for what is happening. So I think there needs to be that. You know, and another reason that I think we need to look at is the way that baseball markets itself. I think it is a sport that roots its appeal largely in nostalgia, you know, the sense of a ward in June Cleaver, America, where dad comes home and changes out of his coat and tie and goes to play ball with his son in the backyard. And that just isn't the world anymore. I mean, for example, I live in western Massachusetts, not too very far from the Baseball Hall of Fame out in Cooperstown. Oh. Lovely place to visit. I go there a lot. And there's a film that they show in what they call the Bullpen Theater. It's the major video for talking about the history of baseball and that sort of thing. And it begins with just that image. You first hear sounds of a mother saying, you know, Johnny, come home. And I fight against getting a lump in my throat because it does throw me right back to my own childhood, and most people, if they're lucky, have a nostalgic feeling for the way that they were raised. And right when I get that nostalgic feeling, I want to hit myself over the head, you know, and say, look what's happening here. You know, it's all about hearkening back to another day. And that certainly doesn't do women any good. Mm-hmm. You know, we've moved away from being June Cleaver. Many. And I think it also has an effect on diversity as well. It's presenting baseball in this backward glance rather than looking forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about, because I don't think too many people know about Toni Stone. I must confess, I'm in a baseball family, and I didn't know very much about her. Baseball's female Jackie Robinson, and she took over. I didn't know this for Jackie Robinson when he went into the majors and left the Negro League.
She took over for Henry Aaron, Hank Aaron.
Henry Aaron, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great Jeopardy question, isn't it?
Who's
the baseball player who replaced Henry Aaron when he moved to the majors? Yeah, she really was a remarkable woman. Toni grew up in St. Paul, Minnesota, and began playing on a co-ed team for her Catholic parish. She had threatened to run away, and a very smart local priest said, how about if I put you on the parish team, then will you stick around? And it satisfied her parents, and it satisfied Toni. So from the very beginning, she began playing with boys. She then moved to playing on a traveling team. This is in the the early 1940s called the Twin City Colored Giants out of St. Paul, and then to San Francisco, New Orleans, bopping around with semi-pro teams. And in 1947, after Jackie Robinson integrated baseball, there was this ironic moment that the Negro League lost its fan base as more and more fans began looking to the majors to see how Jackie and Larry Doby and Campanella were doing. And so Negro League team owners were looking for any way to bring fans in through the gates. And this one team owner named Sid Pollock, who owned a team called the Indianapolis Clowns, had this idea and said, I wonder what would happen if we brought a woman on the team. And certainly he knew that at that time, Tony Stone was the best player who was playing with these semi-pro teams. So he brought her in. And Tony had no misconceptions about that. She certainly knew that she was being brought in as a gate attraction. But she also thought it was her best chance. And here's something else. She lied about her age. She told everyone that she was 10 years younger than what she really was. So here's this woman in her 30s playing against the very young Willie Mays, even on some played against Jackie Robinson, Ernie Banks.
Wow.
Lots of future Hall of Famers. So in, you know, baseball age terms, she was getting up there in years and yet still was able to hold her own. Many baseball historians say that Toni Stone carried the Negro Leagues on her back for a season as people came out to see her. That owner, Sid Pollock, said that, you know, if she's just a fluke, people will come out one time to see her and then they won't come back. But they did, as she continued to play very competitively. At one time in the 1953 season, she was batting fourth in the league for a very short time.
But she was batting fourth in 364, you wrote.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, behind Ernie Banks. Her lifelong average was about 250, which, you know, today's Boston Red Sox, if we had a player who was hitting 250, we would be pretty happy. But she certainly held her own, and she brought in fans through the gates.
Mm. And was she accepted by all of those other players, Ernie Banks, Willie Mays, Satchel Paige? Did they embrace her and say, all right, go to it? Or was it, oh, how can you bring a woman onto the field?
Yeah. Now, this is where the comparison to Monet gets stark. It was a very mixed bag for Tony. There were players who supported her. In fact, Ernie Banks, who I talked to a lot in writing the book, he said that he faults himself today for not getting to know her better. They were competitors. They weren't on the same team. And he said he could tell that she was carrying a lot on her shoulders, and he recognizes that now, that he was perfectly good and respectful of Tony, but looking back, he realized the great burden she was under. There were players on her own team who tried to sabotage her play. For example, Tony played second base, throwing the ball to her in such a way so that she was positioned to get an inevitable spikes up player running into her. At one time after a play like that, one of the coaches on her team marched onto the team bus after the game and said he would buy a one-way ticket home to any player who he saw doing that. So she had support on that level. But, you know, fans would jeer from the stands saying things like, why don't you go home and fix your husband some biscuits. And then the other side of it was I read a newspaper account of one day that the team rolled into town. I think it was down in Texas somewhere. And a 100-year-old woman came out to watch the game. She had never seen a baseball game in her life and knew that that Tony was playing. And she stayed after, and this is what always gets me, she stayed after and simply wanted to touch her, wanted to touch her arm, you know, as if she didn't quite believe that she was real, you know. So seeing Monet run out to the mound with that great ponytail, we don't gasp anymore or think that we're seeing a mirage. We understand it. And I think, you know, the most uplifting part of all of it is that, you know, a little child will lead them, that the kids accept her, and they accept her because she's a good player. They help her win games. They respect her and probably have fun.
Mm. And yet she's still kind of a rarity, right, because she's getting all these phone calls, Jimmy Fallon and the Today Show, and everybody's calling, please be on our show. Oh, that must be something for her to take those kinds of calls, huh?
Yeah, I've heard from some of the reporters covering her who say that she seems to have a pretty good personal support system around her and people who are looking out for her best interests. But, boy, she's been a cool as a cucumber, it seems to me,
right,
that she's handled everything with grace and dignity. And, yeah, she's still the rarity. You know, it's not the old Neil Armstrong, that's one small step for man. It's many, many steps, especially when it comes to women in still seemingly unconventional arenas like sports. It takes many, many steps. And I think not only because I think Toni Stone was such a incredible American, but you know, I think it's important to connect the dots between Monet and Toni Stone to show how long progress in the area of civil rights and social openness, how long that really does take. I mean, it goes all the way back to 1953.
Yeah. Well, Martha, did Toni inspire a number of other women to enter baseball?
She did, and she also inspired owners to hire them because she did bring in people who were interested in watching her play, at least for the Indianapolis Clowns. That owner, after the 53 season, was so pleased with her play that he hired two more players, a woman by the name of Connie Morgan, who was this astonishing athlete out of Philly. That's interesting. I don't know if Monet knows about her, somebody from her own hometown, who was a terrific basketball player, just one of those people like Monet Davis who excels at literally every single sport that she attempts, and a 5'3" pitcher named Mamie Peanut Johnson. Connie Morgan is not with us. She died in the 90s, but Peanut is still around, and she lives around D.C., and I've seen a number of photographs of Monet and Peanut. So there you have two pitchers. Peanut got her name because there was always a lot of you know, trash talking in Negro League games in the 50s, and she was winding up on the mound one day getting ready to throw the pitch over the plate, and one of the players kind of stepped back and laughed and said, "Well, you're nothing but a peanut." Well, the name stuck, and she's been Peanut Johnson ever since. So she played that 54 season with the Indianapolis Clowns. Toni moved over to the legendary Kansas City Monarchs. They offered her a contract she thought was better, and so then she was on, you know, the great team that gave us Ernie Banks and Jackie Robinson, and she played with a Buck O'Neill, which some of your listeners may know that name. Buck O'Neill was the manager then. He came to prominence for a lot of people after the Ken Burns documentary on baseball. He was one of the major interviews in that piece. A wonderful, warm-hearted man who loved baseball in this country about as much as anyone. And but Toni and Buck O'Neill did not get along, unfortunately. I think that they both were recognizing that they were too old to ever make a run for the major leagues. Toni, of course, had other obstacles in her way, being a woman. And it was one of those cases where they sort of took it out on each other. And Buck wouldn't play her, Toni said, on the bench most of the time. They had a real falling out during one time between games where it almost came to blows. And the Negro League was continuing to lose more and more fans as more and more African Americans began their slow trickle into the majors. That's a misconception. You know, a lot of people think after Jackie Robinson integrated the major leagues that the door was wide open. Well, it wasn't. You know, it was one by one by one. The Red Sox were the last team to integrate. It took some 20 years, I think. So Toni retired from baseball after the 1954 season, and she said, "It hurt so damn bad, I almost had a heart attack."
Oh, We're going to welcome phone calls. We'd love to have you join our conversation. Martha Ackman is our guest, and Martha has written a book on women in baseball. It's the remarkable story of Toni Stone, called Baseball's Female Jackie Robinson, and she cracked through to the majors when Hank Aaron Negro League once Hank Aaron left the Negro League to enter the majors. So we're thinking about her as we're captivated by the story of Monet Davis, who is on the cover of Sports Illustrated. She's from a team in Philly, and then we had a team from Chicago, from the Central City, also making it to the Little League World Series. So it brings forward a lot of questions. Are there women in this country who are just as good as men when it comes to playing professional baseball, and are we way past time to see some of those women playing professional baseball? And then we're looking at the other issue, too, because it was unusual that we had two African-American teams who were in the finals for the Little League World Series. Hasn't happened very often, and there aren't a whole lot of baseball teams in central cities because it costs money to play the sport. And if you're really good at it, you need a climate or you need a place to go or you can practice all year long. So why are we seeing a decline in the number of African-Americans in baseball? We welcome your phone calls. I'm sure that some of you have great stories about women in baseball. Maybe you're a young woman who's playing baseball and you'd love to have a career in the majors. Is that a possibility? And why isn't baseball more diverse? Questions of the hour. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Martha is a journalist and author and editor. She writes about women who have changed America. She writes for newspapers all over the country, also is a commentator for National Public Radio. She's an avid baseball fan. Her book is Curveball, the remarkable story of Toni Stone, the first woman to play professional baseball in the Negro League. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number is, we talk about women in baseball and African-Americans in baseball, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. And we'll start taking phone calls momentarily. The other story, there was a Frank, you probably saw this, a Frank Bruni column in yesterday's New York Times that talked about Monet's coach, who also has this wonderful story about who he is and how committed he is to Central City youth particularly. He quit his job to work with young people like Monet. And he thinks that we need more programs, that we need young people in lots of cities giving thousands more a chance to play baseball.
Yeah, I thought that was just a terrific column where he talked about Monet exploding stereotypes about women in sports with poise and grace. And that said something I thought was very poignant, where he said for every kid's success like Monet, there are 100 other kids just like her,
right,
who would love to do it if they just had the opportunity. It's about opportunity. You know, it's about opening the door and letting kids try, or letting women athletes who are at the top of their form try. At least get in the door. Get in the door to have that chance.
Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls. Andrew in Minneapolis. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Andrew.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
All right. So I grew up in Connecticut, and my mom was actually my Little League coach. She was my first coach, and she was my coach for my first 5 years in Little League. And just, you know, I recall stories from her of other coaches kind of ridiculing her and asking, you know, what, you know, does a girl know about baseball? And just there isn't a system in place that fosters you know, women in baseball. I mean, if you look at it, it's not just in the Little Leagues, it's all the way through Major League Baseball. There isn't a female general manager. There's only one who's even in any kind of assistant level position. And that's really just my comment, is that it goes far beyond Little League. It's the entire infrastructure is not particularly welcoming to women. And I'll take my answer off air.
Thank you, Andrew.
Andrew makes a very, very good point that it's not just the field, that it's the Major League office, it's the field management. I think there's only one woman coach currently, a strength and conditioning coach. The LA Dodgers have a head trainer who is a woman, but when it comes to senior team management, it's a very, very small number, and most of those women are in public relations field. You know, Andrew mentioned that his mother was a coach. That's always the thing that I think about when we think about women in baseball. Baseball, I think, cites its founding as around 1869, you know, so Ulysses Grant is president. And in all those years since Ulysses S. Grant, there has not been one American woman who could be a third base coach.
Absolutely. You know? You're absolutely right.
Really? What does a third base coach do? Well, a lot, but they mainly wave people home or say stop. And I don't know a mother in America who isn't good at waving kids home or saying, stop it right there. You know, I'm trying to be funny, but the point is that women can certainly do that. So what this is a lack of will, you know, or just not seeing anyone before them who they think can possibly do
right.
The job. You know, it's a lot about role models, and I think that's why Monet, who is this terrific athlete, when people ask her what she's interested in doing as far as sports is concerned, she's talking about UConn women's basketball because she sees them. That's something
right,
that she can
right.
imagine. But there's no one in front of her who no woman who's a coach, who's in management in the major leagues, certainly not a player. So kids have to see that first before they can imagine it.
What about umpiring? Are there any female umpires?
I think it has happened before, no one currently at all. There's this Institute for Diversity and Ethics in Sports down at the University of Central Florida that kind of keeps statistics on this. And I think that they say that there are, in Major League Baseball Central Office, there are 30% of women are senior executives. Of course, no field managers or general managers at all. And that also affects racial diversity. We don't see many field managers or coaches who come from minority groups as well. And in fact, when it comes to general managers, there is this trend towards hiring not former players, as was the way maybe 20 years ago, but business executives, people who have expertise in management, people from the Ivy League. So that's another trend that we're beginning to see that I think also affects certainly women in baseball because there isn't that pool, but also issues of racial diversity.
Samantha in northern Wisconsin. Hi, Samantha.
Hey, I just have a quick comment. I grew up playing baseball with boys, and I grew up with a bunch of girls that could rival playing any boy. So it was great to see a little girl playing in the World Series. And our favorite movie was always A League of Their Own. So mm-hmm. I know now that a bunch of us have daughters, we're going to make sure that they get to start up playing Little League. But we all transitioned to fast pitch softball then because there was no, you know, high school girls baseball team. So that was just kind of my comment. So great show.
Thanks, Samantha. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I think that's the trend for a lot of girls, that they have played baseball, they play with brothers, or they play sandlot, or certainly today in Little League. But then there's nowhere for them to go if they progress on to college. They're not going to get a college scholarship to play baseball, so they move into elite softball ranks. But there's no reason why girls who start playing baseball can't continue to play baseball. And if there were more avenues open to them, of course, they could continue to heighten their skills. And, you know, I love hearing what Samantha's talking about regarding the current generation of moms and dads in supporting girls in athletics. And I also like to think about some of the greats in baseball whose athletic genes passed not necessarily to sons, but to daughters.
Ah.
And I'm thinking like Muhammad Ali and Yogi Berra, I think, has a very talented granddaughter who's an athlete. So what if that happens? You know, you don't want the door closed for those girls in whatever game they're interested in pursuing. So I think the tables definitely are changing, and the more women third base coaches we have, you know, the more mothers like Samantha who are supporting their kids going on, I think will continue to change. And it won't seem unusual.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an important point, too.
Did you like A League of Their Own?
Oh, I loved A League of Their Own. No crying in baseball, right? I come to this passion for the sport. Honestly, I didn't play baseball. I'm a pre-Title IX baby, so it was definitely softball for me. I couldn't run. I couldn't hit. I couldn't field. But I could throw, so I brought one thing to the table. Not very well, but I did bring one thing to the table. I grew up in St. Louis and played for a team. I've just got to tell you the name of this team. We couldn't get any of the usual businesses to support us, like the Kiwanis Club or the Lions Club. So somebody knew somebody who ran a garden supply store. Our team was called Flexible Hose. And you talk about that's a way great. To build courage, and you run out to center field with flexible hose on your back. You've got to have a little bit of a thick skin.
So are you a Cardinals fan? You can admit it, although I don't know. You're our nemesis.
Yeah,
if you are.
I'm talking to the yeah. I grew up a Cardinals fan with brothers and a father who very very much supported them. All my cousins. But now I live in Massachusetts, so and I have for the last almost 40 years. So I follow the Red Sox. It's a hard season to be a Red Sox fan, and when the Cards play the Red Sox in the World Series, it's not a nice time for me. I had family members who were quoting scripture to me, you know, who said things like "Honor thy father and mother."
Oh, that's funny, Scott in La Crosse. Hey, Scott.
Hi there. Well,
Hi.
Now that I've heard this Cardinals fan thing, I feel like maybe never mind.
I know. Sorry, I shouldn't have brought it up.
I'm forced to say, well, yeah, at least you get into the World Series.
I know.
But,
no.
But here's a little factoid for you. A few years back, Madison baseball was represented by the Northern League, one of the outlaw renegade leagues. And the St. Paul Saints now are one of those teams, and what they are is they're a bunch of they're a bunch of overlooked draft choices or players who are hanging on trying to get one more shot. And what it is, it's about the equivalent of double A ball. Kathleen will be able to relate to that, I think. And back when the Madison Black Wolf were representing the Northern League in Madison, they had a woman named Isla Kite who was pitching for them.
Oh.
And she had been a prospect and got that far in the ranks. And of course, by the time she reached the Black Wolf, she was getting near the end of her tether and you know, was not likely to get a shot. But she pitched, and I saw her pitch in Madison and got her autograph. And, you know, I mean, she, you know, you could tell she didn't have the super heat or anything, and was probably not going to have much of a career going after that little stint, and she didn't. But on the other hand, you know, I wouldn't want to have been standing there holding the bat against her. and what I think I've thought for a long time, and I've discussed this with friends, and we all kind of agree, baseball is really a hidebound sport. And the best example I've got for it is knuckleball throwing.
Mm-hmm.
When do they teach a pitcher to throw a knuckleball? Almost always it's after they've had some cataclysmic arm problems, and then it's kind of like, okay, well, we'll teach you this pitch, and maybe you can make a go of it with that. Well, why on earth wouldn't they say to kids coming up, okay, sure, you got a fastball, sure, you can throw a curve and the sliders and all the variations, but we're going to teach you another pitch that you might just be good at. And, you know, somebody who throws a knuckleball can, you know, look at some of the pitchers who've lasted the longest in baseball. They're knuckleball throwers because they're not putting so much strain on their arms.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if baseball was less hidebound and you had a woman who could really throw and teach her a knuckleball, my guess is you could be a shattering of glass ceiling.
But,
you know, because we've never done it before, we're not going to do it that way. Okay, baseball, we hear you. But come on, give him a chance.
Martha.
Oh, I couldn't agree with Scott more. If Scott's still on the line, when was Isla Kite playing?
Let's see. The Black. You know my memory. I'm going to say late 80s, probably.
Oh, wow. Wow.
What happened was Madison had a single A team, the Muskies, which were Oakland A's affiliate. And then they lost them, and they got another team for 1 year, a Cardinals affiliate, as a matter of fact.
Huh.
And then they left, and then the Black Wolf came in and lasted 2 or 3 years. And I'm going to say right around that late 80s, maybe early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And my guess is she was probably in her middle, late 20s about that time. And, you know, it was a real tough situation because she was playing in what was essentially a single-A ballpark, you know, with no locker room for her to dress. I think they made arrangements for her to dress on her own in the umpire's room or some such thing. But, you know, it was one of those, you know, just kind of not a – It was certainly not playing in the show,
mm-hmm.
but you know she had the ambition and she certainly I thought had decent enough stuff that you know if I could have taught her knuckleball I would have said hey go get him.
Well, that's a fascinating story. I didn't know about Isla Kite at all. It's really interesting to hear about her. You know, the couple of points. The bathroom issue that seems to come up again and again and again, and also no matter what field you're talking about. You mentioned earlier I wrote a book about women pilots who secretly tested the astronauts, and a lot of the prohibitions against them from going on in aviation was, well, we have no bathrooms for the women. It always sort of boils down to that. Well, these are not insurmountable problems. Tony, like what Scott thought Isla might have done, Tony dressed in the umpires' bathrooms. You know, we can figure these things out. But it goes back, I think, to what Scott was saying about just give them a chance. You know, let's see what they do. Maybe it'll be a knuckleball. Maybe it'll be a second baseman. I was talking to one former Negro League player not too long ago, and he was saying that when women enter baseball, he didn't say if, he said when, he said it'll probably be a second baseman. And I always quiz people about that when they suggest second base. And he said, well, you know, kind of a smaller-sized player has to be very quick on the pivot with double plays and that sort of thing. So it's about that opening the door and letting somebody come in and see how they do.
Thank you, Scott, so much for your call. Well, I was thinking, too, as you were talking about female sports reporters and all the hullabaloo not that long ago, oh, you know, these guys are going to be in various states of undress and they're not going to feel comfortable with a female reporter. And, well, you know, people learn to keep some clothes on after the ball game, and now it's open to female reporters, not widely or fully, but it took a lot for that to happen, right?
That's an excellent example. Wasn't it the New York Times reporters took baseball to court and said, you know,
yes,
we've got to figure out a way to do this. And now we have media rooms. And,
right.
and players come either in their uniforms before they get showered and cleaned up or afterwards, and it's all fine, and we've figured it out. I think we can figure out a lot of other things, too.
Not that hard to figure out, right? Pete in Madison is sending an email, loves this topic, and he says, as far as diversity, baseball is actually more diverse now. Increased Asian players, Caribbean players has helped, along with increased Cuban and Latino players, made baseball more diverse than black versus white. Remember, too, historically, dark-skinned players from the Dominican Republic and other countries were labeled black or Negro, whereas today they're not considered African-American.
Pete's absolutely right. I mean, when we talk about diversity, our conversation this afternoon has been focusing on African-Americans, but when you look at larger issues of diversity with Latino players and Asian-American, even Asian players, it definitely teams are looking more diverse because of the contributions of those men.
And I also want to, I love this man. There's also, and I'm sure this is happening in some other areas, but you may want to check him out, the Beckham Stapleton Little League is in Central City, Milwaukee, and this Mr. Beckham played for the Negro Leagues, and he made it his mission in life. And this man does everything from mowing all the grass to going to schools and recruiting young people to play. The Little League has 400 young people ages 5 through 18 years of age, and it provides assistance to single parents and the elderly with economic challenges. And he hopes one day, God bless him, and we'll do everything in our power to help this happen, to bring the Little League World Series to the Beckham Stapleton Field in Central City, Milwaukee. He's a wonderful man, just a wonderful man.
Sounds like a great guy. You know, that you mentioned that Frank Bruni article in the Times, and he was lauding Steve Bandura, who is Monet's coach. And among the many things that Steve Bandura does for those kids is that he gives history lessons. He teaches them about the Negro Leagues and Jackie Robinson, and I think makes sure that at one time, while the kids are under his eye, that they go on a big field trip to Kansas City to the Negro Leagues Museum, which is a terrific way to think about not only baseball, but Jim Crow America as well.
Yeah, it sure is. We welcome our phone calls if you'd like to join our conversation. We're doing, you know, kind of a combination of ideas this hour of the show. I think our conversation prompted by Monet Davis, this young 13-year-old who really plays terrific baseball, and she's quite a pitcher. She throws 70 miles an hour. And if you look at television ratings for when she was playing last week, I mean, they were up like 143% from the previous year's semifinals for the Little League. The team didn't win. South Korea and Chicago went to the World Series final for Little League, and South Korea won. But she's really captured the imagination of so many in this country. And our guest has written about other women who predated Monet and are credited with cracking open the door for women in baseball. So we're looking at women in baseball and African Americans in baseball and getting people into the sport, you know, who traditionally have not been able to afford to play this. With the glove is expensive, the ball is expensive, being on a traveling team is very expensive, and you also need to be able to play most of the year if you're going to be a competitive team. So how do we include more people in the sport? Young people, more African Americans, that's what we're talking about this hour. And our guest is a big baseball person. Martha Ackman is an avid baseball fan, and she is the author of Curveball, the remarkable story of Toni Stone, the first woman to play professional baseball in the Negro League. Here's our phone number. Join us if you would like. We'd like to hear from you. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, on Twitter as well, @KDunnShow. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Scott did call back and left a message with KP that it was Isla Borders, not Kite. So just so you know that, Isla Borders, her name.
Right. Now that is ringing a bell.
Now it is? Okay.
Yeah. Right. We knew about Isla Borders. There's some other women there. A woman named Tamara Holmes played for a team called the Colorado Silver Bullets in the 1990s. She was on the USA national team. She's a firefighter now, but she was hitting 360-foot home runs from the right-handed and left-handed side. And so we can point to a lot of these women in more contemporary times who were trying to take a crack at it as well.
And wouldn't it be nice? I know you've quoted, and he was such a philosopher, the former commissioner, Bart Giamatti. Baseball is one of the few enduring institutions in America that's been continuous, adaptable, and in touch with its origins. It's simply an essential part of this country, a living memory of what American culture at its best wishes to be. It was always so poetic. But when you think about it, wouldn't it be wonderful if women were involved in that, you know, the best of what American culture is? There are people excluded here from that. And it should be a part of the America that is continuous and in touch with its origins, and it's not.
Giamatti was such a lyrical writer, and I think that what he says is prescient. You know, he talks mm-hmm. about a world that that we aren't quite living in yet, but that we can begin to imagine. You know, there's a new Major League Baseball commissioner coming in. His name is Rob Manfred, and he was out at the Little League series watching Monet. And when somebody asked him, "What do you think? You know, is this going to be the next thing on your plate?" He said, "I'm not betting against gender when it comes to women in Major League Baseball." So that was a little bit of a hint that he mm-hmm. might be entertaining the idea.
Mm-hmm. And isn't it amazing? See, I don't understand how people can pitch like this. How does this young Monet pitch 70 miles an hour at the age of 13? How do you do that?
I don't know. You're asking the wrong person. You know, I was on flexible hose, remember? But they're just kids who love it, who are physically adept at it, and athleticism does not know gender. You know, there are terrific girl athletes just as there are boy, and we need to encourage all kids, I think, because there's so much more involved in organized sports than just the athleticism. You know, I think that's what that Frank Bruni column was talking about. You know, that teaches kids self-respect. It teaches them discipline.
Yes.
It teaches them history. It teaches them manners. So all kids should have access to that.
Mm-hmm. And what about baseball? You say this as a player and somebody who obviously loves baseball, and you've written history about baseball players. Do you think that it's something that will be a part of the American fabric for a long, long time? We're seeing Little League numbers dropping slightly. Are people going to, I don't know, sports that aren't as civilized like football? Forgive me, football people, but it is true. It's not quite as civilized. Or going to soccer, which is the up-and-coming sport that has more motion? Or will it always be a big American sport?
I can't imagine a world where baseball isn't still a compelling sport. I think it needs to grow. I think it needs to open up, definitely. But it's hard for me to imagine a springtime where we don't hear the crack of a bat. You know, Tony used to say growing up in St. Paul that every spring when she'd hear the bats started popping, she said it would be like a drug. She just had to get outside and play. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm really in that camp, that I think that it's something that we associate with green lawns and summertime and
absolutely
popcorn in the stands and everything else that's associated with a great game. Somebody once said that behind every great sports story is a story of America. And I think if you consider Muhammad Ali and Billie Jean King, that's certainly true, Jackie Robinson. And I think Tony Stone's story is a story of America as well. You know, it's a story of missed opportunity and the price we pay for prejudice in this country. And the price we pay is lost talent. You know,
right.
When there are great players like Monet Davis, and who knows what she might become if she were encouraged to continue to play into her late teens and 20s, and if there was an avenue for her and other girls like her, that we just leave too much on the table when prejudice gets in the way.
Well, this being America, she's also a good advertising possibility. So I think there will be a lot of encouragement for Monet to continue in the field. What do you think?
There's a Wheaties box in her future?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is. And what about you? You love the game. You've written about the game. When you were a kid, or was it just that women didn't go anywhere, that you couldn't even imagine something related to baseball in your life? I mean, you have done it with a book about it, but being a manager or being an umpire or being a player?
No, I think I was always more hardwired to be a writer and observer of it. But I also have to say that without any models in front of me, I just couldn't imagine it.
Right.
Plus, I wasn't any good. I mean, I think that's the point. But when you don't have role models in front of you, as Tony Stone did not, it really takes a remarkable individual to have the strength and the character to imagine it for themselves, right, and then to push themselves in that direction. I didn't have that kind of imagination. I think it's doubly hard when you don't have someone in front of you who's doing what you want to do and what you love.
Yeah. Oh, Martha, thanks so much. I had a really good time, and thanks for writing the book. It's just, we didn't have time to get a copy of the book, but I would love to read your book, so it would be fun. And I thank you for being with us. It was great.
Thanks, Kathleen. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, good. I'm glad. And her book is Curveball, The Remarkable Story of Toni Stone, the first woman to play professional baseball in the Negro League, Martha Ackman, our guest this hour. So, that was fun, wasn't it? Thanks to Judith Sears-Poisson for producing this hour and to K.P. Whaley for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Tomorrow, we're going to be speaking with an astrobiologist, Dr. Maggie Turnbull, and Alan Pesch, who's the Barlow Planetarium director, about the possibility. I love talking about these topics, the possibility of life on other planets. So that's coming up tomorrow. Great conversations ahead. Have a lovely evening. Thank you for listening to this hour.